Welcome, members and guests, to the November 22nd meeting of the City Club of Eugene. Welcome KLCC listeners and our TV audiences on community television and the Oregon Wynn Network. I'm Marty Wilde, City Club President. Our sponsors today are Sacred Earth Botanicals, Dot Dotsons, Gatos Churnside and Balthrop, States Industries, and a special thank you to KLCC for airing the programs on Monday night, and to KPFF Consulting Engineers for our office space. We thank you for listening. These programs are free for our listening audience, yet there are costs involved. Your contribution is completely tax deductible and will help keep our organization healthy. If you act now with a donation through the Oregon Cultural Trust, not only will your contribution be matched, but you may receive up to a $500 tax credit as opposed to merely a tax deduction. Today's presenters are John Borofsky and David Funk of the Meeting the Challenge Task Force and Michael Coles, Lane County Assessor, who will discuss new revenue for the city to meet the challenge or not. Welcome to our new member, Edward McGlone. In 2009, the City of Eugene faced a projected budget deficit of over $10 million. The library's operating levy was due to sunset, employee payroll costs were growing, and the economic downturn was curtailing revenue. The city manager convened the Meeting the Challenge Task Force to address the problem. They gave recommendations, but the city has yet to implement any of them, preferring service cuts to new revenue to date. Right now, the city is in the process of examining the remaining approximately $5.3 million gap between projected revenues and the costs, and trying to determine how much of that will be met through further cuts or with additional revenue. And the question before the City Club today is there a place for new revenue in the city budget? If so, what are the advantages and disadvantages of the two of the recommendations from the Meeting the Challenge Task Force, a restaurant tax, a utility surcharge, or additional revenue based on the property tax? After the speakers present their options, we'll have an opportunity to participate in a Q&A session to discuss the possibility of new revenue. And without further ado, here are our speakers.
Okay, this is David Funk, and I'm going to start. Is this mic on? I want to first say a couple of things. Number one, the Meeting the Challenge Task Force met 4 years ago, so forgive us if we've forgotten some small details from those meetings a while back. I think we saved some of our notes, but not all of our notes. Secondly, I just want to give credit to John Borofsky, because we did come out with three specific recommendations, one of which was a food and beverage tax or a restaurant tax. And John, who's a restaurateur, sat right there through the deliberations and considered everything very carefully without doing all he could to squelch our talking. So city government at any given time is wrestling with any number of competing priorities. Right now, on their plate, the city council has MUPTI. They're looking at MUPTI, they're looking at infill compatibility. We're looking at high unemployment rates. We're looking at homelessness, South Willamette Civic. You can go on and look at all these competing priorities. And every once in a while, a solution comes along that actually has the potential to solve more than one problem. And I think in this case that the food and beverage tax or the restaurant tax is one of those possibilities, and I'll explain why in a minute. As Marty said, we're looking at still a $5.3 million deficit. And over the past several years, the city manager has cut services as far as he can. They've cut, I believe, and forgive me if the numbers aren't correct, but about $24 million out of a $125 million general fund budget. They have eliminated about 100 city jobs. So they have cut quite a bit. And any business person will tell you, you cannot cut your way to success. You can cut your way to survival, but you cannot cut your way to success. And I'm convinced personally, and having looked at this stuff not only during the Meeting of the Challenge Task Force, but ongoing looking at city budgets, that we've cut as far as we can without negatively affecting the quality of life here in the city of Eugene. So we met 4 years ago, and we're still wrestling with the same problem that we were 4 years ago and even before that. And we came up with three specific recommendations out of the Meeting the Challenge Task Force out of about 15 we looked at. And these were a utility consumption tax of 1.5%, which would raise about $2 million, a city service fee and the restaurant tax. And as you all know, the city service fee went up for a vote in May of 2013, this year, and failed. So we can check that one off the list. And the city service fee wasn't our first recommendation, nor was the utility consumption tax. And after all the deliberation we did arrive at the restaurant tax, and I don't remember if we reached it easily. I mean, I know we didn't reach it easily, but I don't even know if we were unanimous in that recommendation, and I know we were not all happy about the recommendation, but looking at all the alternatives is what we came up with. And we weren't totally naive either in making this recommendation. We knew that the what was then the Oregon Restaurant Association, now is called the Oregon Restaurant and Lodging Association, would probably vigorously oppose a restaurant tax. We also know that in 1993, a restaurant tax had been tried in the city and failed. In my estimation, having looked at the campaign, I think it was a bad campaign, but it nonetheless it did fail, and we had that to look at. And this is my personal opinion, but I think a tax like this would have to be citizen-driven, would have to start with a citizenry, because I think no sane politician would say, hey, I got an idea, let's do another tax. But we know one other thing, too, and that is that two cities in Oregon right now have a restaurant tax or a food and beverage tax. That's Yahats and Ashland. So we know it's possible, and these were voted in by the people. The problem with city expenses like roads and police services and maintenance and parks and things like that is they are paid for by city taxpayers. And yet they're used by a lot of people that come into the town and use those services that we all pay for. And I'm actually, now that I've sold my downtown business, I am one of those people. I live just outside the city limits, so I now use city services without paying those taxes. We also know that a significant, but not a majority, of restaurants, people who dine in restaurant sales, are from visitors from out of town. So during the debate we had at the MTC, I pushed hard for the 5% restaurant tax. We looked at it at different percentages, but because, as I said earlier, I thought this was a chance for us to get ahead of the game instead of keep treading water like we had been doing every year. And we were essentially trying to fill a budget hole without figuring out how we were going to get out of it in the long term. I believe that if we dedicated our efforts to economic development, bringing businesses and jobs here, and bringing family wage jobs here that paid the property taxes, that could support the city on the long run, and could also support our schools better, because we've heard in economic development that education is very important criteria for businesses that are moving to town like this, or businesses that are trying to stay in town, especially as we enter the sort of information age of jobs here in the area. And before I... And one of the things that if we did the restaurant tax, it raises enough money to not only pay to cover the budget gap, and I'll explain the numbers in a second, but it also gives us the opportunity to build incentives for businesses. And these include quality of life issues like maybe we can get some jail beds for that revolving door we have at the jail and do some of the things that enhance quality of life and the kind of things that attract businesses and keep people staying here. So I also want to acknowledge that if we did a restaurant tax, that it puts a burden on a certain segment of the economy, and that's the restaurateurs who have to work this tax. So we did have some ideas how we could sort of relieve that burden to some degree. So let's look at how this works. So if we had a 5% tax to every meal that you eat going out, that's for a $10 meal, you're paying $10.50. For a $100 meal, you're paying $105. So out of that, according to projections in 2009, the city takes in $14 million. Now, part of the recommendation we had was that we take some of this money, and I'll say 20%, so $2.8 million, and we set that aside to compensate the restaurant somehow for being tax collectors and to offset that burden that they'll be carrying. And this money might be in direct compensation for the taxes they collect. It might be in helping in marketing like Travel Lane County does based on the room tax. It might be in low interest or zero interest loans for ECRs, electronic cash registers that can automatically compute the tax. Anything to make it easier for the restaurant. If we did that, I'm just going to run through some numbers that are all theoretical. If we did that out of the $14 million, we'd be left with about $11.2 million. Cover the budget gap at $5.3 million, we're down to $5.9 million left. And let's say it takes, and I have no idea what the number would be, but it takes about $2 million to just monitor and collect taxes and have the staff to do that. Lop that off, and we're still left with $4 million to do the things that I mentioned, the economic development kinds of issues and other things to get us ahead of the game. And we would be collecting this tax ongoing-wise, and so that would save us from having to cut services, cut library hours, reduce park maintenance and things like that. So I'm going to let John refute everything I just said, but I do want to say that we know this would be difficult to pull this off because, like I say, we've lost one time before. But and the restaurants in general, the Oregon Restaurant and Lodging Association will claim gloom and doom just like the beverage industry did back in 1970 when the bottle bill was introduced. And yet we still see there's still a vibrant industry in the beverage industry. So anyway, I'll let John now give his take on this, but onward.
Hello, my name is John Borofsky. I am a restaurateur here in town. I am co-owner of a couple of restaurants. I'm also was a member of the meeting, the Challenge Task Force, and also a City of Eugene Budget Committee member for 7 years, and actually right now I am one of the planning commissioners for the City of Eugene. And I didn't have quite the presentation that Dave did in advocacy of any one particular or another. I just was here to kind of give a view as to what we did as the Meeting the Challenge Task Force. The task force did come out in favor of a restaurant tax, and I believe I even voted for that back then, which was difficult. But I think I gave some valuable insight as to how the restaurant industry would be affected by this. As anybody knows, it's difficult to target one industry to try and raise revenues. It'd be like coming to your house and saying, we're only going to tax the third house on the block because that's easy to count to three. It's a tough sell. As far as some of the impacts that Dave mentioned, yes, it would be difficult on the restaurateurs. And if it was put in properly, that might be able to be mitigated somehow. As far as realistically, I think the thing that Dave said about it being coming up from the citizens to put this forward would probably be the only way that I could see that would happen. As he said, the Oregon Restaurant and Lodging Association is a strong advocacy for this. They would, I think they would weigh in on it both economically and through its members to try and have an influence on this if it came out. We looked at a lot of different avenues besides the restaurant tax. We were given a whole litany of ideas to try and look at as far as revenue sources. We weren't given a specific target amount or dollar, fill a $8 million or a $10 million gap. We looked at them, whether or not they were legal, whether or not the City of Eugene could implement them. We found that there were several that made good sense that were not applicable because of statute, either state or county, that put them beyond our means. We looked at, it was a diverse community that was sitting at the table. There were business owners, there was people like Dave who have a good pulse on the city's the political will of the city. There was representatives from the chamber, from the University of Oregon. And so we kind of threw things against the wall to see if they would fit. Several of the ideas were we just kind of put out there, and we said, you know, that's not politically feasible at this time. A couple of those were a personal income tax and the service fee. And we've seen since our committee met that, you know, we sat and we said, well, I don't know if that could pass right now. And this was in 2009, which was a little bit different of an economic time. But there was a tax for the schools, an income tax that was proposed for the school funding that went down. We all are familiar with the city service fee that went down last year. Whether or not that went down or up for any particular reason is debatable. But, politically in these days, it's difficult to get new revenue. So we looked at other things such as local option levies and the utility consumption tax. That would basically be a fee on your utility bill, and that was our second option that we kind of put forward. So I guess with that, I'd just like to say, we looked at a lot of things. It's not an easy question. How do you raise more revenues? But I think Dave has his idea.
Good afternoon, City Club members and guests, and also viewers. I'm Mike Coles, Lane County Tax Assessor. I just wanted to present a brief informational presentation, not necessarily advocacy towards a local option or any other tax proposal. Just a little background on the Oregon property tax system for those of you who may not be fully aware of the constraints that we currently have. In 91, 92, we had Measure 5 pass, which limited the governmental rate to $10 a thousand and the education rate to $5 a thousand. In 97, we had Measure 47 and 50 pass, which limited the maximum assessed value of properties to the 95 value minus 10%. So the property tax system that we have today is very complex. To increase the property tax revenue, there are several factors that have to occur. One of the factors would be increased growth in the economy and increased new construction for the city of Eugene. For myself, I view that as one of the very important concepts that we need to look at. Last year, the city of Eugene, the Lane County, saw a 2.6% increase in the taxable value for all properties in Lane County. And typically you'd think we'd see a 3% increase per ballot measure 47 and 50. However, with the real estate market being very tough the last 5 years and new construction activity slowing down, taxing districts saw increase less than the expected 3%. But as we look forward to a real estate market that has stabilized and a market that's showing signs of rebounding for 2013-14, it's very important to look at economic development and growth as an opportunity not only for new tax revenue, but for using the existing tax base to fill any gaps that are in the city's and the county's budget. That said, there are several options and items that also need to be looked at. The tax base under Measure 47 and 50 is pretty well set. The one piece that can be looked at is the new construction that is occurring throughout the county and the city. The climate that brings in new construction is very important, because every dollar of new construction that is added to the tax roll adds to the tax base. Also, the general economy, as the general national economy is improving, it rebounds and has an effect on our regional, city, and local economy. There's also exemptions. Every exemption that we have takes away from tax dollars and essentially redistributes the amount that needs to be collected among other taxpayers. Upzoning, as far as existing properties that are maybe not being used to the potential, when that goes through a zoning change and or an exception, that increases the tax roll and adds revenue to both the City of Eugene and to Lane County or other associated jurisdictions. One thing that I wanted to say is that our department collects taxes on 83 different taxing districts. So we are very stretched. We have a limited budget, and our staff has been cut back severely over the past 15 years due to ballot measure 5, 47, and 50. We're pretty much at bare bones. We do the best job we can. However, there's also opportunity as we look at possibly doing new reappraisal, looking at special projects for personal property and other avenues that are existing under the property tax system that are not currently fully funded right now for compliance or making sure that we're reaching full revenue potential. In addition, a strong look at economic development and growth is very important. As far as a local option is limited by Measure 47 and 50. It's subject to compression, and compression is a function of Measure 5 that limits governmental rate to $10 per thousand. Currently, there is very little governmental compression under Measure 5. I ran some scenarios as far as for a local option to see what it would cost a typical account to meet the budgetary gap proposed or shown by the City of Eugene. And again, these are just very rough numbers proposed using 2013 data. For a local option to collect $5 million in taxes, it would have to be roughly about 40 cents per thousand local option, which would be about $204 per count on average. For a larger amount, say $9.5 million, that would have to raise to about 75 cents per thousand, which would be about $279 per account. And again, those numbers can vary depending on the economic conditions for when a tax is implemented and what the status of the overall economy is and new construction in the county. Thank you.
One more thing that I would just like to reiterate. That was one of the main things that when we all sat down at the meeting, the Challenge Task Force, that everybody agreed on was that economic development would be the strongest and best driver for more revenues for the city. Wouldn't you agree, Dave? Everybody said economic development gets you to where you want to be. If you've got a strong economy and more jobs and better living wage jobs, that will raise the boat a lot faster than any tax ever could.
And I want to ask Mike one question about the local option levies have a limited time, though, right? Like 5 years or
correct.
So?
The recently passed local option for the sheriff's office was 55 cents per thousand, and that's typically a five-year term. One avenue that I did wanted to say is that one a pro for a local option is that the infrastructure is already set up. We already have the taxing system set up. We have our offices set up for assessment taxation. The overhead is already there, and it wouldn't require additional administrative expense. A big con to that would be that it puts more of a burden on the property taxpayer.
All right, we'll take a 5-minute break so your tables can come up with questions, and then we'll resume and ask questions.
You're tuned to KLCC Eugene 89.7 FM, KLCO Newport 90.5, 89.1 KLFR Reedsport, and at 88.1 KLFO Florence, KMPQ Roseburg, and KLBR Bend. We're also on the web at klcc.org.
You are listening to John Borofsky, Dave Funk, and Michael Cowles at the November 22nd meeting of City Club. Now it's time for questions from our members on the topic of new revenue for the city, to meet the challenge or not.
Karen Seidel, City Club member, thank you for your presentations. I would like to ask a question about the possible restaurant tax. Dave, I think you said that the last time it came up for a vote, it was defeated, and it hadn't been presented very well, and that this time it needs a grassroots citizen initiative to make it happen. My question is, has there been any work done on getting the citizens initiative to happen, and then how should it be presented?
I guess that's me. This is Dave Funk. To my knowledge, no, there has not been any work done to get a citizens initiative, and that was my opinion, that I didn't think any politician would bring it up. I could be wrong. But I think what needs to happen, last time the Restaurant Association used the argument that this was unfair to poorer people, under the assumption that people with less money went to restaurants equal to other people, but actually statistics show that's not correct. The more money you have, the more you go out to restaurants. So, but that was a very effective argument. I never even figured out the argument of the city in 93. It was not clear. There was no clear vision from that about what would this mean besides a tax. I think if you're going to promote a tax, you have to say, we already know, you have to say what's going to happen with that. What's going to happen with that money? How are you going to see that money is being spent wisely? So I think if in the next go around, if we do it, and I don't know who would be the person who would start this, but I'll tell you it's not going to be me, that we would have to have a very clear vision, and the city would have to really understand where this money is going to be spent and how it's going to be spent and how it's going to be monitored.
Thank you. Sandra Bishop, City Club member. The question that came up at our table is, since the fire and ambulance services for Eugene and Springfield have functionally merged for operations, there's one chief, and what would happen to city revenues if a special district for fire and ambulance services were formed, Eugene-Springfield Special District, would that free up general funds? How would that affect the city?
Well, I'll take a stab at this one. It possibly, and again, I'm a restaurateur, not a city staffer or a financer. I'm John Borofsky. That potentially could free up general fund dollars. A lot of the money that is in the general fund goes to police and fire, 70% approximately of the general fund's budget is dedicated to police and fire. And so potentially, if you had a special district that paid for police and fire, you could supplement some of that money out. We'd have to ask Mike about the compression issue, whether or not it would subject us to some sort of a compression. But it would be one way that you could possibly do it. It still would be a separate taxing district, so your taxes would go up. I mean, because you would still be getting taxed at the city of Eugene's rate, and then you would be being taxed for the special district. So I'm just pulling numbers out of the hat. If you're paying a dollar right now and they formed a special public safety district that wanted to do a 25 cents, well, it's not your city of Eugene tax isn't going to go down to 75 cents, and the special taxing district isn't going to be the other quarter. You're going to be paying $1.25.
If I may continue on that thought, as far as the compression issue, for the education rate, the city of Eugene is at roughly $7 a thousand, so the limitation is $5, so that's pretty much automatically compressed on every account. For the governmental rate, it is roughly $9 a thousand. $9 a thousand, which is under the $10 limitation. So there is a little bit of movement there, about a dollar. However, that does come into competition with other governmental levies and local options. So, for example, Lane County's 55 cent per thousand recently passed a local option would come into play if another local option was passed. Continuing on with the thought of efficiencies and breaking out the districts or combining the districts, that would still come under the $10 a thousand limitation.
Hello, Lance Caronto, City Club member. You guys mentioned that Ashland and Yahats were able to implement the restaurant tax. Has anybody spoken to representatives of those communities on how they have implemented it and what success they have had in implementing it? Did it cover a deficit? Was there leftover money after covering that deficit? Any information on that?
Well, we haven't spoken to them, or at least I haven't, and I doubt if John has. They were dedicated taxes that I believe it was stormwater for Yahats and parks and waste management, I believe, for Ashland, although I'm not sure about the waste management part. So those taxes were voted on by the people and were dedicated to very specific kinds of things, which is what I was referring to earlier. If we have money, we have to make sure that people know how it's being spent.
And one other thing about those districts or those communities that have imparted that type of a tax, both of those communities are tourists. A lot of tourist dollars go. I mean, if you think of Ashland and think of Yahats, there's a lot of people that are visiting there from outside the area, and they were looking for a way to capture that. Now, that would happen here in Eugene, but there, as many of you in this room know, a lot of people that live in Eugene also dine at establishments in Eugene. I think maybe, I'm not sure, anecdotally, I don't know if it's more or less than Yahats or Ashland, but that was something that was part of their decision.
It's probably less. Travel Lane County thinks it's about 30% of visitors and tourists eating in our restaurants.
I'm Ruth Demler, City Club member. I was part of the committee that overviewed the city budget, and there were a few things that we didn't bring up today that I'd like to ask your question and see what you have a view on. One is the performance auditor like they had in Portland was elected for the city and came in and found that people were working not when they were needed, and that they cut down the budget by quite a few million in Portland because they were able to adjust people to a better performance time when they were needed. Another thing is to have all the houses and all the homes in the UGB annex so that we could have taxes from everyone who lives and enjoys the city of Eugene in the UGB. And another about the restaurant, you know, so many of us, I think, were opposed to the taxations that have been presented so many times because they're flat taxation and they affect the poor more than really they affect people of higher incomes. Do you think with a restaurant tax, maybe they could do like $10 and above? Or something like that to make it a more consideration for our community? And I just wanted to ask that because flat taxation doesn't belong in Eugene. I don't think any of you feel that way too. Thank you.
If I may comment on the performance auditor, that's a very important point to make. Performance of every department, division, being the county and or the city, always needs to be looked at. I know that the county is actively looking at recruitment for performance auditor, either external or internal, and that's very important for any public body.
I would just say that as far as the performance auditor, I would say I'm not either for or against a performance auditor. I would like to say that in all of my interactions with city staff over the years, I've been quite pleased with the professionalism and the ability to which they do their jobs. I believe that in the past several years, they've done the best that they can to squeeze every dime out of the dollar that they can. That being said, whether or not a performance auditor could squeeze another couple pennies out, I'm not sure. I just know that the professionalism that I've dealt with on the city staff has been exceptional. And as far as flat tax on the restaurant, you know, we weren't charged with creating the mechanism for the tax. I'm sure there's all different ways that it could be implemented, whether there was an exemption, whether there was certain types of restaurants that would get it or not. I'm not sure of the legal aspects of that, but I'm sure that could be looked at too when they were crafting some sort of an ordinance.
And I'll just echo what John said, especially about the city staff. I've worked with them quite a bit, both as a commissioner, a sustainability commissioner, and working with the city on a lot of issues. The city staff is very impressive. They work really hard. I don't see an efficiency there. I see more inefficiency in my own business than I do in the city. As far as your UGB part of your question, that's a whole another thing fraught with incredible difficulty. I suppose it would indeed help because it would bring in more tax stuff, but that would be a whole another can of worms.
If I may follow up on the performance auditor, a general external auditor or internal auditor, it just in my humble opinion, is actually very important as far as freeing organization. Ideas and the efficiencies that even though internally may not be able to see, externally may actually be able to see some efficiencies or other items that need to be taken account of.
Paul Howard, member of City Club. I suppose if I were to ask whether or not small deli counters inside grocery stores and so on were affected by your proposal, you wouldn't know because you didn't write any details of a policy. So is that correct? We were more curious. One of the ways we do tap into revenue of visitors coming from outside is through the room tax. And we were curious as to whether or not some of the funds that are gathered there couldn't be diverted to the city rather than 100% of it going to Travel Oregon, is it, that consumes that? And could that room tax feasibly be raised? I think Eugene's is quite a bit lower than some metropolitan areas in the state of Oregon. I say raised with the proviso that those funds, additional funds, would be diverted to the city.
I can answer that, and I would have to delve into my packet for that. But that was another committee that I was on, which was the financial investigation team that the budget committee put together. Ruth was a member of that, and that was one of the areas that we looked at. If we were to raise the transient room tax, could we use some of that to help fill the general fund budget gap? There is some legislative restrictions to that. It was, and I can't remember off the top of my head the exact numbers, but it was a certain percentage could be not siphoned off, but used from that. But it was a small percentage. It was in the $100,000 to $125,000 range if we bumped it up another percentage per thing. So I could look into that. But it was something that was looked at by the financial investigative team that the budget committee is going to be using that report to help put forward a recommendation to the city manager coming up here in December.
Thank you, President Wilde, panel. Thank you for being here today. Pat Farr, City Club member. I stepped away from my table for a moment, and they came up with a question that I am tasked to ask. It's about sales tax, statewide sales tax. In 2003, I was in the state legislature. I sat on their revenue committee, and we had an interim committee on how do we implement a state sales tax. We couldn't come up with an answer. And I have lots of opinions, which I won't share here today, but I'd love to talk at length about it at some point. The question from my table was, did you discuss or have you thought about how could a statewide sales tax, which specifically that addressed the state's dependence on income tax, personal income tax, did you discuss a statewide sales tax and how that could help at the city level or even at the county level? And if you didn't discuss that, could you talk about it anyway? Thank you.
Do you want to start?
I'm not sure.
Okay. I'll try this, Pat. For one thing, the sales tax was outside of anything that we considered for a statewide sales tax. It was beyond our charge here to look at that. I personally think it's near time that we did have a state sales tax, but that was not a point of discussion. We did look at taxes on corporations, and hopefully John remembers better than I do exactly what those were, but they were on gross receipts. We looked at gross receipts tax on companies and determined, if I remember, that it was unfair because gross receipts and net receipts are often quite a bit different depending on the nature of the business, and so that it would unfairly penalize businesses that generated high amounts of income but very low profits on those income. Can you now make this into English?
Yeah. Again, the state sales tax, obviously, that was outside of our charge. We were looking at revenue streams that the city of Eugene could implement. We did look at a sales tax specifically for the city of Eugene, and it was a restaurant tax. It was a sales tax on money that you spent at a restaurant. So we did look at a sales tax, and we looked at it very closely. Sometimes too closely, if you ask me. But as far as an overall one, that again is above my pay grade. That goes north to Salem, and I will leave it to the revenue committee up there.
Okay, I'm John Anik, a city club member. I'd like to point out just very quickly. My father was in the restaurant business in Illinois, and during the lifetime of the restaurant, saw the tax double, 3% to 6%, but no effect on operating profits, which continue to increase, which might be a consideration, something to throw in the pot here. And I just got back from Victoria, where I paid a room tax of 14%. So these are some numbers that you might consider. But the question I have is from the table, what might be the advantages of a package of taxes? You've talked about these individually. Why not combine, go up for two or three of these with a little bit here and a little bit there? Maybe if you nibble at it, the nibbles add up to what you need.
A package is definitely an option. One thing to keep in consideration, however, is the administrative costs of any tax that's considered. If you have a very small amount of income generated from, say, a restaurant tax, and then the other burden is pushed on to property tax owners, the administration costs may outweigh the benefit. So it really is important as far as how the package is put together, and definitely it is an option. However, it just needs to be carefully analyzed.
I think it would having a bunch of combined smaller taxes besides the administrative costs would also be very harder to sell and I'm talking about politically here. Just to get across that, okay, we're going to tax this, we're going to add this, it would seem like a lot more than it might be, and that's a personal opinion. We didn't talk about that much, although we were looking at a lot of taxes that we were trying to, at that time in 2009, cover a $10 million gap. And so we were looking at, well, what if we have this $2 million here and this $3 million here? But it just seemed impractical, and we didn't talk about it at length.
I'm Merlin Huff, City Club member, and our table had some basic questions on property tax. How is the city-county split determined under the $10 cap on property taxes, and how does compression work when increasing tax rates press against that cap?
Sure. To answer your question, as far as the current breakdown for property taxes, permanent rates have been said, in addition to the local options, right now the breakdown is approximately of a typical property tax dollar, 46% goes to school districts, 32% goes to local cities, 12% goes to Lane County, 4% goes to fire districts, and 6% goes to library, parks, water, or marine oil. So the breakdown is fairly set, again, with the limitations that are set forth within ballot measure 5 for the cap rates at $5 for education and $10 for governmental. As the rates rise above the $5 limitation, and if it does rise above the $10 limitation for government, all the associated taxes in those bins or in those classifications are proportionally decreased. So if education went to, say, $8 a thousand, all the associated taxes in that education category are, they're compressed down.
Bob Cassidy, City Club member, and it's also on an assessment, so that would be yours. My experience is that the assessment of the buildings, and you mentioned that slowly, briefly, that you were going to be looking at that perhaps. Mm-hmm. My own experience has been that the assessed value does not necessarily reflect to the purchase price of property. I bought a piece of property for $20,000. It was assessed at that time at $3,000, and 2 years later, it was still valued at $8,000. Mm-hmm. That's past experience, and it's still going on right now from other experiences that I'm aware of. Why isn't the selling price of something the market price that is used for determining the assessed value?
Thank you for your question. Just in a nutshell, when I first started at the county in 91, we were doing physical reappraisal of all the accounts every 6 years, and that was a mandate by the state. When ballot measure 4750 passed, we laid off, I think it was 15 staff members of appraisal. And at that time, real market value wasn't thought to be as important as it actually is now, though we've seen a declining real estate market where the real market value is becoming the taxable value because it actually has fallen below the maximum assessed value. And not to throw out too many acronyms, I know it gets kind of confusing, but the bottom line is that a declining real estate market decreases the available tax revenue to the districts. To further answer the question is that our inventory for property due to limited staff resources is fairly outdated. A lot of properties haven't been looked at for 20 some odd years. And so one of the goals is always to find ways using either new technology, increased staff, and or items such as GIS, aerial photography, other methods that are cost efficient for the taxpayers, but also ways to bring equity back into the system. However, with Badger 47 and 50, where it took the 95 value minus 10%, some properties are set at assessed values that are artificially low or artificially high, where 88% of residential properties, that's the real market value versus their maximum assessed value, there are great variations between. You may have properties side by side that are paying $2,500 in taxes, and the next property may be paying $3,000 in taxes, and they're the exact same property. And that's inherent in Measure 47 and 50. A secondary piece to your question was the sales that are used on your property. We use a mass appraisal model. We appraise approximately 175,000 accounts per year in the county, and we do take into account sales prices. However, in the mass appraisal model, there's always outliers on the high side and the low side, so pretty much the valuation that ends up is somewhere right in the middle.
I'm Robin Fletcher, and one of the questions that swirled around ARCTABLE is that the last tax measure that we didn't pass. The claim for the people who were trying to pass it was that we would see massive cuts and massive disasters following its defeat. And we haven't really seen that. Not that it may not be happening, but we haven't seen it. And I'm wondering how you would frame the next one to make that distrust disappear.
Well, that was something that we discussed when we were meeting back in 2009. We felt that if a revenue source went to the voters, it should have a clear objective as to what it's going to pay for, and if it is voted down, that service should go away. That was somewhat the argument behind the last city service fee that was defeated last May. May. And what happened was the budget committee, which makes a recommendation to the city council, made the decision to use savings, basically the reserve for revenue shortfall, the reserve account, to fund those services that were supposedly on the chopping block, the branch libraries, the Sheldon pools, the fire company at Station 2. They felt that they wanted a little bit more time to look at all of the options, so they made a recommendation to use savings, and that's what they did. And whether that was a correct decision or not remains to be seen. Whether that eroded the trust of the voters in ballot measures going forward, it's very difficult to say. And that was a decision that was made by the budget committee and then forwarded on to council, and the council chose to go with it that way.
And we still may see fallout from that, just because they covered it with short-term money, essentially, and put off the cuts that were threatened. Those cuts still may happen. The FIT that he mentioned, the Financial Investigative Team, met to look at all revenue sources. The Budget Committee upped their meeting schedule, I believe, to monthly. To really delve into, you know, the problem didn't go away, we just filled it with temporary monies, so it still may show up.
Jerry Diethelm, City Club member. This is a little bit speculative and kind of looking farther down the road, but 46% of the taxes presently go to education. I think that was the figure. And that's a major piece of the taxes that we pay. And at the state level, we know we're hearing again another round of talk about sales taxes and how that might influence things. 46% sales tax. And I guess the only kind of sales tax I think would ever pass is if we dedicated it for education, and that might impact everything. I'd like to hear your opinion about that.
Sure. The state plays a very important role with education. The money that's lost by Measure 47, 50, and 5 is typically backfilled by the state. As a sales tax dedicated to the school district, it really, in my personal opinion, it might play in a very important part. However, it really depends on how it's framed. There we have the sales tax as an option. We have income tax currently standing, property tax, and I think it's very important for taxpayers to know and to be very transparent that if indeed a sales tax for the school passes, that there might be an associated decrease in other property tax revenue or other revenue sources. So that would probably have to be framed in that framework for that type of item to pass.
Edward McLone, City Club member. I'm curious if there was any discussion about state preemption of local taxing options and what changes to that may have on an impact for meeting the challenge for the city.
There was a state preemption on. We did look at one tax that was preempted by the state, and we didn't actually have the authority to do that, and that was a real estate transfer tax, basically a sales tax on when you buy or sell a home. We looked at that. There are many municipalities throughout the country that use that form of taxation to help bolster their revenues. In the past legislative session, this last one or the one before, the realtors and other people were able to put in a law that basically says local jurisdictions cannot enact one of those. So we got aced out on that one and are not, by state statute, able to, is my understanding.
We did find when we were doing the meeting, the Challenge Task Force, we ran into that a lot of things where the state preempted. For instance, on alcohol, local entities cannot tax alcohol. At least they couldn't in 2009.
And with the real estate transfer tax, I believe Washington County has a pre-existing real estate transfer tax, and so they have that tax in place, and that was grandfathered in. However, as indicated, that's not currently an option on the table.
Thank you for bringing clarity and vision to this City Club discussion of new revenue for the city, to meet the challenge or not. And thanks again to our sponsors, Sacred Earth Botanicals, Dot Dotson's, Gatos Turnside and Balthrop, and States Industries. We meet next on December 6th at LCC Downtown Campus for our next program, Working Together on the Best Outcomes for Kids, after a short break to celebrate the Thanksgiving holiday. Thank you.